I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Most of us are getting pretty comfortable with the new smart technology. I don't know about you, but my smartphone is one of my most valuable possessions. We're on the cusp of a revolution in wearable computers built in part on some of this smart technology. At the forefront is Google and their Project Glass. These are eyeglasses that allow you to see an email message or a photo, a video, maybe even a map. They were featured at Fashion Week in New York in September. Computerized clothing, jewelry, and shoes are also being developed, hoping to find a public that wants to look good while monitoring and storing information about their heart rate or their food intake or their footsteps. Well, today we want to take a look at the latest in wearable computers and what the future may hold, and we have two guests who have joined us. Thad Starner is associate professor at Georgia Institute of Technology School of Interactive Computing and the technical lead and manager on Google's Project Glass. And Thad Starner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Farhad Manju. He's Slate's technology columnist, wrote a book called True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. And Farhad Manju, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Good to have you both here. And Thad Starner, if I can begin with you, I know that you've been wearing a version of these Google glasses for some time now, ones that you created for yourself. Can you describe them to our listeners?
Well, the system that I've been wearing since 1993 has been a display that fits over one eye. That one's not a see-through. But it seems like it to me because the human eyes share the vision from both sides, and so it looks like I can see through it. Mm-hmm. And then that goes down to a cable, down to a bag that generally contains a small computer and a one-handed keyboard called a Twiddler. I can type up to 130 words per minute on it, though I sustain around 70 words per minute. And I do all my email and all my papers and everything from that. It's basically my main system. I've been wearing that as part of my daily life since 1993.
And are you wearing them now?
No, I'm actually wearing Project Glass right now.
Well, how is Project Glass different from what you've been wearing for almost 20 years now?
Well, for one thing, glass is all self-contained. There's no wire, right? Also, it is, you know, as you can see from the demos, there is a camera built into the system, so you can take pictures or video or do Hangouts. There's a lot more flexibility with what we can do with glass than what I did with my old systems, as far as, you know, how it is arranged on the face and how you work with it. A lot of the principles, a lot of the stuff we're going to see from glasses is from principles that we've learned over the past 20 years from using these devices in our daily life.
So you can get, for instance, email or a photo or something while you're wearing these glasses.
Well, my old system, the system I normally wear until I joined with Project Glass, basically is a full computer system, internet-connected, and we've had that internet connection since 1996, something called CDPD. You can basically do anything you want with it. Matter of fact, I was wearing my system in 1998 when I first met Larry and Sergey, the founders of Google. They were grad students, and I was at Stanford. I was a grad student at MIT. And we met at this conference, and we started talking about how cool it would be to have PageRank on your eyeball. And, decades later, they invited me to come and work on this project.
So are you a cyborg, Thad Starner?
I've been a cyborg since 1993 when I put one on. I didn't look back.
And you didn't look back. Well, Farhad, let me get you in on the conversation. And you, I know, have written about these Google glasses. What do you make of this technology?
I haven't spent as much time with it as Thad has. My time with it, Thad let me try on his old system for a minute or so the last time I met him a few months ago, and then Larry Page had, or actually it was Sergey. Sergey had an event in the summer, and we tried on some members of the press got to try on Sergey Brin's Google Glass.
And he's a co-founder of Google.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he's a co-founder of Google, and he is a big fan of the project. I got to try his on for probably about 30 seconds or so. I didn't get to do much with it. Mm-hmm. But I can say that from the 30 seconds and from hearing Thad talk about his life with these kinds of devices, it seems to me like it would be a great... just kind of from someone who loves technology, I would love to try these and wear them for a while and see how they alter my interaction with the world, but I also think that they could be incredibly useful. I mean, one of the things that we do now is we are constantly kind of distracted by these devices we're carrying around all the time, our phones. And when we interact with our phones and other devices, tablets and computers, we lose focus of the people and the things around us in the real world, in the offline world. And I think, and from hearing Thad describe it, I think this is a these glasses are a way, even though it sounds counterintuitive, are a way to stay more connected with the world while we interact with the digital world, because you don't it's sort of faster to switch between the two, and you don't have to kind of lose focus of one entirely while you get lost in the other.
Well, Thad, let me go back to, because I know that's one way that you have described this experience, and I have to say, as someone who lives, I guess, in the offline world when it comes to glasses, it's sort of hard to imagine that would allow you to be more focused on a person or a conversation if you're getting this stream of information, I guess, that you're accessing while you're living your life.
Well, let me give an example.
Okay.
Back in turn of the century, U.S. and Europe, most men wore pocket watches, and pocket watches, you know, took quite a while to get out of your pocket, check the time, and put it back. Right, and then we switched to wristwatches, and wristwatches are much faster to access. You can just glance at the time and go back to what you're doing. It's, you know, split seconds. So why did we make the switch?
Right.
Well, because during World War I, in order to time trench warfare, you couldn't use a pocket watch. You know, the amount of time it took to get out your pocket watch and make sure you're all charging at the same time basically meant you were stumbling around and you're going to get shot by the other side. Also, when the aviation was taking off, so to speak, navigation was done by time and heading. And so having a pocket watch while you're trying to fly a plane was just impossible. And so they switched to having a wristwatch so that you could actually, you know, watch the time, get to the time while you're, you know, paying attention to where you're going with your airplane. It's the same thing with this system. For example, right now, I've just checked the time, and it hasn't broken the conversation whatsoever.
but did you have to get used to that? I mean, to have this to be both connected to a conversation that you might be having, but also getting the stream of data. Did that take some time to get used to, or is it more seamless than we might think?
Well, here's a very interesting point. If you try to do two different tasks at once, like suppose I was trying to read my email while having this conversation, I'd lose about 40 IQ points. It's very hard to actually multitask between two different topics. However, if I was, say, looking at my notes on my screen while having this conversation, which is indeed what I'm doing, it is not different topics. It's something I can go back and forth from very quickly and helps me focus my attention on the topic at hand.
Farhad, let me go back to you, because you talked about these particular glasses, and we want to talk about the other kinds of clothing that have computers built in that are probably going to be in our future. But you talked about how it alters our interaction to the world. And I'd love to have you just expand on what you mean. I think I know where you're going with that, but where do you see this technology taking us?
Well, I mean, I think you can think of it as doing everything that you do on your smartphone, so you know the kind of utilitarian things we do on our smartphones, like look up directions and navigate to a new spot, or get a quick text message. Those kinds of things would probably be among the main. It seems like among the main things people do with these kinds of devices. But you know, we can also think of brand new uses for wearable computing, and we're seeing some of them now. Like there are many different kinds of devices, shoes and wristwatches and wristbands and other things that monitor essentially your body. So what they do is they kind of figure out how much you're moving during the day, or how fast you're moving, or where you went, and they tie it back to the internet, to databases, and they give you graphs and analytics on it. And that's it's really, it's sort of a really novel, it's something that we couldn't do before. Like we were telling time before we had wristwatches, but this is something that, you know, this is information about ourselves that that was inaccessible in the past. And now, because of these devices monitoring you, you could figure out, you know, information about your health. You could change your behaviors. You could decide, you know, this device shows me that I'm not walking very much, so I'm going to walk more often. So I think there will be brand new kinds of uses like that, and probably many that we can't imagine right now, that will come out of these devices that are on our bodies all the time.
And Thad, I mean, would you say that you, it's sort of weird to even ask this question, but that you have a different relationship with your glasses than you might have with just a regular pair of glasses?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the computers that we are using here now have a relationship with you that's on a split-second-by-split-second basis. It's an augmentation of your life. And what we're really trying to do is, you know, make systems that help the user pay attention to the real world as opposed to retreating from it. And, you know, make technology that really, you know, helps mediate the interruptions you get today with your smartphones technology around you. Try to mediate the interruptions instead of adding to them. And so what you get is a much more intimate form of computing than we ever had before. And, you know, that can be everything from the health stuff that Farah was just talking about, or it can be the augmented memory that I use all the time. Literally what I'm doing here is pulling up the last conversation Farah and I had about this to, you know, sort of remind myself of, you know, what sort of turns of phrases that he used.
Oh, really?
To describe the technology, because, you know, every time somebody does a report on my work, I learn a little bit more about how to articulate it well.
But it also tells us our ability to absorb data. And I mean, even beyond multitasking, it seems that while we're having this conversation, that now I have notes and pieces of paper and I have a pencil in my hand here while we're talking, and you're doing all that through your glasses or your goggles.
And the thing is that, you know, I can be a whole lot more efficient, a whole lot more calm about it, simply because I can type a whole lot faster than you can write.
Right.
I have everything right in front of my eyeball instead of trying to look between pieces of paper. And I have, you know, my entire history for the past 20 years right here. And so I'm a whole lot more powerful, a whole lot more, you know, calm and in control about having all this knowledge than I would be if I tried to do it, you know, any other way.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking with Thad Starner. He's associate professor at Georgia Institute of Technology's School of Interactive Computing. He's also the lead or the technical lead and manager on Google's Project Glass. And these are eyeglasses or goggles that allow the wearer to access information, whether it's an email message or a photo or a map or maybe even a video. Featured actually this month at Fashion Week in New York. Also with us is Farhad Manju, and he's Slate's technology columnist, wrote a book called True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you make of all this? We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the fully inclusive Waldorf Kindergarten offers full and half-day programs in a socially and emotionally rich environment where children learn through play in a holistic and nurturing setting. Learning is accomplished through puppet shows, seasonal celebrations, art, music, storytelling, and an abundance of outdoor activities and play. Hosting an open house at Camp Hill Special School's Chester County campus on October 6th. Details at camphillkindergarten.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington supports WHYY. When someone is injured or ill, a long wait in the ER can be damaging. According to the Centers for Disease Control, average ER wait times are nearly 1 hour. St. Francis's Emergency Services team has worked to reduce the time to get patients into treatment rooms or to give them direct care to 30 minutes or less. More at stfrancishealthcare.org. At St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington, we specialize in you.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Farhad Manju and Thad Starner about the revolution in wearable computers, talking about a product that Google is working on called Project Glass. It combines the capabilities of a smartphone with high-tech wraparound glasses. There are shoes that can measure jumps and pace and mileage, a bracelet that could monitor your sleep and food intake. What's next and what's under development? Is this the kind of technology that interests you, or what's your reaction? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Farhad, going back to you and hearing how Thad is using these glasses in such a seamless kind of way, I'm thinking when someone's smartphone goes off, they fumble through their pocket, or if they get, you know, beeped, they're fumbling through their pocket to grab their phone or fishing through their purse to try to find their phone to find out, you know, what's going on in this wonderful little smart computer. Is this what we're talking about, creating just a much more seamless relationship with our computer products?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that it'll take some time, and one of the difficulties might be kind of figuring out how we how the input devices for these for these glasses and for other wearable computers. So I know Thad has kind of unique and something that a keyboard that he uses to type, which has a few buttons, fewer buttons than a traditional keyboard, and I think that he's gotten good at it over time. I don't know if other people will take to that kind of input. Maybe we'll be talking to our phones or using voice input or some other way. I think that's going to be the key to cutting down on the fumbling, is to kind of figure out how we're going to interact with these devices, actually get them to do stuff and respond to us.
Thad, you want to add to that?
Yes, one of the things that we've done academically, and most of the stuff I'm talking about here is about our past academic work, is something called the Remembrance Agent. And one of my students took this device, or this idea, and let me describe it to you briefly.
Sure.
It's something that sits there and listens to what you're saying using a noise-canceling microphone. It only listens to what you're saying, not what anything else is around you. But as you're talking about, say, wearable computers, embedded sensors, it's pulling up past emails, past files, past papers you might have read that might be relevant to the conversation. And it's just pulling up little one-line summaries at the bottom of your screen, and you can choose to pull that information or ignore it. But what I find often is that just having it pull up a one-line summary on, say, Nike's fitness sensors,
mm-hmm.
Just reminds me of another topic I want to talk about, and it's just sort of augmenting my mind just through listening to what I'm saying and running stuff in the background in sort of this ambient way.
Mm-hmm. And I guess Farhad, it's a mix of this smart technology that we see being developed, and also this incredible access to information that we now have.
Right. I mean, it's both of those. I think that what this is kind of faster and more ubiquitous access to that information. And in general, I mean, we've seen that I think that we enjoy benefits from our devices because they give us access to that information. And the reason that the reason people like smartphones is that you can access the information when you're on the go. It's fundamentally different and better than your desktop computer, because you can't get the information that's on your desktop computer when you're out at the supermarket when you want to figure out a recipe. And if you kind of extrapolate that to having it with you all the time, even when you're kind of in conversations with other people or meetings, you can get access to this information. And if you're wise about how you use it, you can do it in a way that doesn't distract from your conversations and just sort of doesn't take away from those social interactions.
Well,
I think that's one of the things that is key here, Farhad, is that what we're really looking at is micro interactions. Mm-hmm. people always talk about multitasking, and it's not really what we're doing most times. It's more multiplexing. We can switch between things very quickly, like, you know, checking your time on your wristwatch. But you can imagine that if you can make a computer interface that you can interact with so quickly that, you know, you can do it while walking, or, you know, while going from one meeting to another, or do a Google search during a conversation when we want to say, you know, in my case, I want to look at up the, say, refractive index of acrylic. If I can do that in the middle of the conversation, it really changes the quality of the conversation. And I think that the key is these micro fast interactions.
Well, that's interesting, because as you were talking, I'm thinking about those dinner conversations or even seeing people out to dinner and half of them are on their smartphones and the kind of sort of, I don't even know how to describe it exactly. And I know for some people, they're saying leave your smartphone at the door and you're not allowed to use it during dinner. But it sounds like that for you, you can be at dinner in part of that conversation and also checking Google.
Well, I mean, that's the point. It augments the conversation. It really, for me as a researcher, it really makes my conversations much deeper. I don't have to, you know, guess at something. I can get the information right then when it matters to further the conversation.
So when someone, you know, makes a statement, you can challenge them on it, right? Because you can Wikipedia it or Google it.
Well, you know, that might be good for a dinner conversation.
Yeah, right.
But in my, you know, when the family's having an argument about, you know, how long can a raccoon live, or whatever your family gets wrapped up in its time.
Yeah.
But for me as a researcher, or me as an academic, it's much more of a, hey, you know, this paper on how people use their devices in their daily lives. You know, what was the result there on people, how people take down telephone numbers? You know, it really helps us to be able to look at that information quickly and, you know, when I'm teaching, to give students the information they need exactly when they need it.
And Farhad, even looking into the future, and I'm thinking, of course, of the aging baby boomers and how some of this wearable computers could give valuable information about health and heart rate and food intake and calories and all of that. Do you see that as something on the horizon, or perhaps it's even here?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of these devices that do some of that right now, especially about kind of your physical activity. And there are smartphone apps that connect to these little blood pressure monitors, so you can kind of get your blood pressure every day instead of and kind of track it over time, make a graph. And I think there are more coming. I mean, I think we'll see more and more of these. One novel thing that I've been looking at recently is, you know, there are lots of GPS trackers, and for people who you know, may have Alzheimer's or kind of getting toward the point where they may not know where they are, that kind of device where you can track your loved one and try to make sure they're safe, that could be a really important thing for people.
And how much do you think video games, Farhad, have helped to add to this technology, this smart technology?
Well, one of the interesting things is that the way that people use these fitness devices sometimes resembles playing a game. So,
right.
Like, you notice that, you know, I've walked 10,000 steps today, and tomorrow I'm going to try to beat that, kind of in the way that you try to beat a high score. So the kind of game mechanics kind of are sometimes built into these devices.
Also thinking that just these video games and the kind of digital worlds that they create are looking more and more lifelike, if I can use that word, and making us perhaps more comfortable living back and forth between the analog and digital worlds.
Well, I think one of the things you need to remember is that when you're dealing with the real world, you want to keep your attention in the real world.
Right.
So it's better to make games that encourage that attention as opposed to take you away to the virtual. I mean, I'll give you an example of a project we're currently doing here at Georgia Tech. We're very interested in type 1 diabetes right now, especially with children. And one of the things that these current glucose monitors do is provide you just a number, and that number is actually, you know, a little old. It's like 15 minutes in the past. And what you really want to know is not just the number, but the direction it's heading. And, you know, checking this thing all the time, because these are little implanted devices, is really awkward. But actually having that graph on a heads-up display where you can check it quickly really changes the tenor of what you can do. Right? It really sees, you know, what, you know, you can get a sense of, hey, when I walk, it really does reduce my blood sugar level by this much. And here, while I'm eating, I can see how it's affecting my blood level, and maybe I should take some insulin in just a little bit here, but I can try to use less insulin with time. I've learned how to see these trends because it's so easy to look at the graph in real time and correlate with what I'm doing in the real world. And you can imagine gamifying that for children pretty easily, and yet it doesn't really take them out of the real world.
And that's Thad Starner, associate professor at Georgia Institute of Technology School of Interactive Computing. He's also the technical lead and manager on Google's Project Glass. And Farhad Manju also with us. He's Slate's technology columnist and wrote a book called True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. A very interesting subtitle there, Farhad. And we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you think of this technology that we're talking about? Give us a call. We have Noah from Doylestown joining us. And Noah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I actually have a couple of questions, mainly about actually the software. I'm assuming there's an operating system that goes along with these classes. I was just wondering, you know, what would that be? And secondly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would like to assume that eventually phone calls would be able to be made from these classes.
And I hate to say that he had a question about phone calls and the phone line was so bad we couldn't hear it. But let me take the software operation system and Thad, if I can toss that to you.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not allowed to talk the details about Project Glass. And, you know, I can talk about my academic work, anything in my academic work. But, you know, I only can talk about what's already been released about the Project Glass. So, you know, I can't get into the details there. And I should also give you a quick correction, Marty. I am a technical lead and manager of Project Glass.
Oh, instead of the.
There's several of them. You know, some very bright people working on this project. And I'm not the only guy. I'm certainly not the only guy working on it.
Fair enough. No, I'll change the to an A. Farhad, let me go back to you and just help us understand just how competitive do you think it is? Google's working on some things. I'm sure Apple's working on some things as well. Are we seeing a lot of competition to develop some of these new products?
I mean, I think we're seeing more competition in the area of wearable computing. Sometimes people don't think about these devices as being wearable, even though they are. I mean, for example, Bluetooth headsets or these fitness bands that I'm talking about, or there are many new ideas for smartwatches or watches that integrate with your cell phone to give you kind of more information than just the time. Those kinds of things are technically wearable, but people don't think of them as computers because we're so used to them, I think. I think that we're so used to them that we don't think of them as being otherworldly. And so something like Project Glass is very novel, and people think of them as, you know, kind of a different order of computing. I think what will probably happen is we'll see more of these kind of intermediate-type devices that you wear on your body that do more and more things. You know, we know that Google is working on these on these glasses. We don't know when it'll be released. I think that, you know, if Google is successful with them, we'll probably see other companies come out with things like it. I imagine that you know, over the next few years, this will become a competitive field, and you know, that's to the good. I think that, you know, this is a new form of computing, and we should see lots of different ideas for how to do it.
Would you agree with that, then?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things we did when we started the wearable computing project up at MIT was make MP3 players, because we thought that that's what would be the first thing to be successful, and it was. It was the first wearable computer that really got accepted by the masses. And, you know, of course, nobody even thinks about those being wearable computers these days. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to see is a spectrum of devices that, you know, fill many niches for the user. Eventually, we're going to have, you know, people having a central device that connects them to the Internet, maybe has a battery with it and a radio connection and some storage, and then different peripherals that you have on your body, depending on what you want to do.
Let me get Roy from Orland to join us on Radio Times. And Roy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, you know, this kind of dovetails into what you just said. I use a LiveScribe smart pen when I go to class and also sometimes in business meetings. And essentially what it does is it records everything I write down, all my notes, and also keeps the audio. And I can take those files and put them up on my computer and reference them later. And if I miss something that somebody said, I can go back and, you know, it gives me the time and everything. So it's really, really good. But I'd love a pair of those, you know, cool glasses because I wouldn't forget anything. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's just, that's just my comment. I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, Roy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I've never heard of a smart pen.
Yeah, I use a LiveScribe pen all the time. It's a great device for journalists because you know you could be interviewing someone out in the world. You record their audio and you write down your notes at the same time, and so you can sort of write a note about what they're saying while they're saying it. So you kind of get a context on the conversation, and then you have those for later. You can put them on your computer, and they're. You know, you can see your written notes and tie them to audio. It's a really fantastic device.
Yeah, go ahead,
Sam. The thing I find about those devices is they're too slow. I mean, when I developed my wearable computing equipment to take better notes in class, and I found that either I could write down a full set of notes or I could pay attention, but not both. Right. So if I paid attention, I get the intuition of the topic for all of 2 hours and then lose it later on. If I just wrote down everything, I never get the intuition, but I had this complete set of notes. And so for me, the pens just were not fast enough. And so I went to a one-handed keyboard instead, which was much faster. And I found that, you know, by putting the focus of my screen the same depth of the lecturer who's writing on the board, I didn't have to, you know, glance up and down all the time at the paper or laptop, whatever I was using at the time. I could keep my focus, my physical focus, at the right depth, see what the person was doing, take really good notes, and still understand everything. And, you know, I found that process really sharpened my attention. I mean, when I'm talking to reporters, I know that the complex physical task of writing down, a sound bite takes so much mental effort that basically the person doing it has the memory of a drunk because they're focusing on just that one part. And so when I'm giving interviews, I only give, you know, one good sound bite at a time and do filler. When you're talking to somebody who has one of these wearable computers and they can type quickly, you can just keep on going. It's fast, it's intimate, it's deep conversations you can have because they have the ability to get the stuff down and down quickly and still attend to what you're saying.
We're almost up on a break here, Thad, but do you think all this technology that you use has actually made you smarter?
I would argue so. I can certainly have access to more information. And when I'm having conversations, almost everybody uses the wearable computer as part of their daily life.
Yeah.
When we're having conversations, we'll outline the conversation, both what has been said, but also what we want to say in the future. And so you know how people tend to interrupt a conversation with a great idea they just had. That just tends to derail the conversation. With a wearable computer user, these people have done this for years, they'll write down that idea and bring it back into the conversation later when it's more appropriate. And so the conversation is going to be deeper and you know, search more.
Well, we're going to take that short break back to our conversation with Thad Starner and Farhad Manju. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, recipient of 10 Oscars, the most awarded to a musical. West Side Story will be projected on a giant screen at the Kimmel Center as the Philadelphia Orchestra performs the music live. Tickets at philorc.org and at 215-893-1999. October 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Kimmel Center, the movie and the music. West Side Story with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
On the next Fresh Air, J.R. Moringer talks about his new novel, Sutton, based on bank robber Willie Sutton, who was a folk hero in an era when the public hated banks.
As good as he was at robbing banks, he was even better at escaping from prison.
Moringer also wrote the best-selling memoir, The Tender Bar. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll hear how two men, both Republicans, are impacting the amount of money in politics. One opening the spigots, one trying to stem the flow. Also, partisan films from Michael Moore to Dinesh D'Souza. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We're talking about the revolution in wearable computers, Google's Project Glass. Also talking about some interesting computers used in clothing and jewelry and shoes. And our guests are Farhad Manju, Slate's technology columnist, author of a book called True Enough, Learning to Live in a Post-Fact Society. And Thad Starner, associate professor at Georgia Institute of Technology School of Interactive Computing and a technical lead and manager on Google Project Glass, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Jane from, looks like Alverson, to join us on Radio Times. And Jane, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This all sounds very cool and interesting and all that, and what I'm wondering, have they thought about these items or these computers full circle? For instance, when they become obsolete, what happens to them? And is it possible to make them green from the beginning so that we don't have to deal with excess obsolete glasses and jewelry with the computers in them?
Jane, let me see. Let me test that first to you, Farhad.
No, it's a good question. I think that it's not pertinent to only these wearable computers. I think it's a topic of interest for kind of all devices that we use these days. We're using more of them, and disposing of them can sometimes be difficult. I think more and more manufacturers, electronics manufacturers, are thinking about this stuff, and you can see various ratings on them about their recyclability. When you go to buy one of these, but I think that it still remains a problem for some of these.
And is that something that you and your fellow designers struggle with?
Oh, of course. But I think the couple notes here. First of all, when you're looking at something like the wearable computers, first of all, there's a whole lot less waste there. I mean, comparing, say, the laptop to something to one of my wearable computers is just the sheer volume of electronic waste is a whole lot smaller. The second thing is the amount of battery that you need to power is a whole lot smaller. And let me talk about the batteries for a little bit here. The batteries are probably the biggest concern you have from things being green. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the wearable computing community has done, and I've written a couple of papers on this, is figuring out how do we get away from batteries. And we've looked at systems where you put an insert in your shoe, and as you walk, you generate power for your computer. And so you can imagine a system where you have your, Wi-Fi hotspot that connects, the stuff on your body to the cellular network, being powered by this thing in your shoe, and suddenly, you don't need as much battery. You're actually just recollecting power from the person's normal everyday motion, and that I think is really exciting. We're going to see a whole lot more work done in this sort of harvesting power from just normal human actions.
Are there health effects from wearing wearable computers, Thad? And there's always been these theories about cell phones giving people cancer. I'm not sure it's been proved or not, but is that an issue?
Well, when you look at the stuff we're doing wearable computers, the devices we're doing so much less power than what a cell phone puts out. Mm-hmm. That really hasn't been a concern. Everything that we've been looking at, we're not intentional radiators in those frequencies. And there's been no real correspondence between even the cell phone level of power and, bad health effects. I will say one thing about health and these wearable computers is there's some significant improvements that can happen. For example, the display that I normally use, you can change the focus from, 6 inches to infinity. And that allows you to have less eye strain than sitting there working at your desktop computer where you're fixed at 18 inches all the time. The keywords I use allow me to relax and, you know, type in any position, and so I don't get the RSI problems that a lot of people get from typing on desktop keyboards, and I don't get the neck strain or back strain a lot of people get from sitting at the computers for 8 hours a day, because I can walk or lie down or sit or whatever else, and it turns out to be a lot less bad for your body to have one of these mobile systems than it is to have a laptop or a desktop.
And what is RSI?
A repetitive stress injury.
Okay.
So things like carpal tunnel or tendonitis.
I got you. Did you want to add to that, Farhad?
No, I mean, and I think that, you know, over time we might see more benefits from the kind of the health monitoring things that we were talking about. But that kind of is a we'll have to wait to see what the actual improvements in health are there.
Oh, and there's one thing. Farhad, did we talk about the mobile music touch, the whole idea of being able to do rehabilitation with these mobile devices?
I don't think we did.
So I don't think Farhad covered this, but we've found this effect where we have this glove now at Georgia Tech, which you put this thing on, and you have you do something else like this conversation, and this thing will teach you how to play a piano melody without your conscious attention. It was really quite extraordinary, but what we found is when we gave this to people with tetraplegia due to partial spinal cord injury, this tapping on the fingers, a sensation, tended to have them improve their dexterity and sensation level in their hand after a partial spinal cord injury, a break in their spine. And so I'm very excited about the idea that these wearable computers can actually help for people with strokes or spinal cord injury or MS, where you can have wearable rehab systems that just work without your conscious attention.
Farhad, that sounds extraordinary. You want to add to that?
No, I mean, I think that's... I remember Thad was talking to telling me about that, and it sounds pretty amazing and fascinating. And the idea generally that, like, these computers can become a part of our bodies in a way that we might not even be aware of and might get very used to and kind of adapt our behaviors around them. I think that's a powerful idea that we'll probably see more of over time as we use these devices.
And even thinking differently about our bodies, Farhad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've all noticed that if you wear a wristwatch for a while and then you take your watch off, you, like, look at your wrist still to kind of look at the time because you expect it to be there and you kind of feel that this machine is in some way part of you. I mean, I definitely feel that way about my glasses, my regular spectacles. I can't function without them. And perhaps that'll happen, with these with these machines, these electronic devices that we attach to our bodies.
Well, Thad, would that be a fair description of you, that in a sense you can't live without this stuff either?
Well, I find it certainly a whole lot better lifestyle to live with it than without it.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. It looks like we have Michael joining us from Hightstown. Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you for taking my call, Marty.
You're welcome.
This all sounds very high-tech Star Trek and wonderful. I just feel like we're getting very far away from, like, human interaction. I kind of think of a scenario where I'll be sitting at a dinner where someone's fumbling for their iPhone, and now I have to look through their glasses with some kind of writing on it as they're trying to peer through at me. It just sounds very disconnected, and, you know, I feel like, Photoshop can make a great painting and whatnot, but it doesn't take away the human brushstroke that makes that painting so beautiful. And I just like your guest to speak about, human interaction as it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Michael. I didn't mean to step on your words there. No, I think you raise a very good point, and I'm going to toss that first to you, Thad Starner.
Well, one thing that is true of any technology or any sort of change is that some people will use the systems to become more socially graceful and more human, and some people will abuse the technology. And, what I try to do when I make systems and make systems that help people become more socially graceful. For example, when I am about ready to visit one of my colleagues, I pull up my notes from the last conversation we had so I can say, hey, how's your daughter doing? Last time we talked, she was just entering college. Or, hey, the last time we were talking, you were working with this PhD student on order picking. how did that go? And so, you know, I try to use my technology to make myself more socially graceful. And also I try to make it so that the when I use my technology, it actually helps me focus on the other person, focus on the conversation. Now, granted, you're going to have people who, you know, are the crackberry addicts who, you know, need to feel the need to check their email all the time. But, you know, currently how people do that is they pull out their phone and they have to hit a few buttons and they it really distracts from the conversation. You know, for those people, you know, it might be, but, you know, this is not how I live my life. But for those people, you can imagine that if they feel this need to be connected all the time, perhaps having the message fly past their screen as they have the conversation allows them to relieve their mind from this burden of feeling like they need to be connected all the time. Mm. So, you know, I can see this stuff going both ways.
Sure.
But, you know, in my personal experience, you know, what we try to do as designers is design it to be as graceful and as encourage the proper use as we can.
Well, and just picking up on that, Farhad, and when you look at technology through history, there's always been the concern. I remember doing a show about the telephone, the invention of the telephone, and one of the criticisms was that the telephone was going to ruin the family hour, and maybe it has. But nonetheless, you know, technology can go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that I've noticed in covering technology and in using new devices in my own life is that, you know, it depends on the person. And if you're sort of fundamentally a jerk, you're going to use these devices to accentuate your jerkiness. I think that, you know, if you're kind of graceful and so if you try to be graceful in social situations, you will understand not to let these devices kind of ruin your social interactions and improve them. But I don't think that it kind of will. It will be more, all of these devices kind of give us more opportunity to ignore the people around us. But I don't think that it's going to sort of change good people into bad people.
Thad, are there privacy issues with, for instance, this Project Glass or these Google Glasses?
Well, I don't think there's anything new here. There's always been this social contract on, you know, what you're going to do with a conversation. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you as investigative reporters have been able to record everything they say and everything around them for years and years and years. Matter of fact, you can record all the conversations you have in about 4 gigabytes per year. And yet nobody does that, you know, unless you're an investigative reporter, because it's not part of the social contract. You know, this is how you lose friends. And so it's the same thing with, you know, with a mobile phone, you know, a camera phone, any of these sort of new technologies. There's a contract between you and the person you're talking to about, you know, are you how are you going to use this information? And one of the things that we try to do academically is make systems that's very apparent to other people what you're doing with your system at any given time. You can see that in Glass. You have to take a picture. You have to squeeze a button close to the display, which is very similar to how you would click a button on a mobile phone or on a camera. And you know, you know when somebody's taking a picture.
Right. You talk about it's an unwritten contract though that we have with people that we share the public world with.
Yes, it's an unwritten contract, but you know, it's something that we've evolved socially to deal with. And, you know, we're just continuing that social contract. And, you know, the scary thing is that everybody in the world right now is bugged, everybody with a cell phone. I mean, you got a pretty good microphone there that can be turned on remotely by the cell phone company just by downloading a new operating system. And, you know, yet we don't worry about that because, you know, the threat model, the idea that somebody's going to do this seems so ludicrous. You know, we're not really changing anything here with these new devices.
Let me get to Don from Reading to join our conversation. And Don, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I think your show is terrific, Marty.
Thank
you. I listen to it every time I have the opportunity.
Excellent.
But the question is, they're going to have to devise a device that will detect that someone has one of these things, whether they're looking at their watch or through their glasses, when they go into final exams or other tests in different schools, because
cheating.
There's got to be done something to keep the cheating from happening. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I have a good anecdote on that one.
Go ahead, Fed. Go ahead.
So when I was doing my qualifying exams, I was using my wearable computer. And a qualifying exam for a PhD student, you have four professors around you, and you have a couple topics you were supposed to become expert in, and they can ask you anything in that field. And I was really nervous about this. This is basically where you either continue on with your PhD or you get thrown out. So I was very nervous about this. So I actually downloaded every single paper and every book I scanned and put onto my wearable computer.
Wow.
And I made a system such that, this remembrance agent, such that as I typed the questions that the examiners were asking, it would pull up references that were appropriate to answering the question. And I had gotten permission to do this, you know, well in advance, but the examiners had forgotten about it. And I went through this three-hour process. And at the end, one of the examiners said, "Hold it, Thad. You've been wearing your computer the entire time.
Oh,
are you running the remembrance agent?" I said, "Yes, I am. This is what I'm doing." And he said to the rest of the committee, "Do we actually think this is fair?" And they argued about this for a little while, even though I had gotten permission ahead of time. And my PhD almost read that the this doctorate is granted to Thad Starner and his wearable computer. Because they said I was a cyborg. I wasn't taking the exam by myself.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would love to carry on our conversation, picking up on that as well. But we have to end the hour. Thad Starner, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Farhad Manju, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out about this program, including Facebook and Twitter, archives, podcasts, SiriusXM Radio. Bob Ball's the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us.